You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray here in the studio with Stevie Nicol, and we'll be looking back on today's Premier League games and also ahead to some rumours in the summer transfer window. But let's start with a look at the Premier League table after today's result. Liverpool 9 points behind Manchester City. City do have a game in hand. Arsenal are now up to fifth in the league with 2 games in hand on 4th place West Ham and just 1 point behind them. As we now welcome in Jan Agafyatov, Don Hutchison and Shaka Hislop as well. Let's start with that Liverpool-Leicester game then, shall we? 2-0 in the end. And what do you know? It was Diogo Jota with both of the goals, Stevie.
Yeah, and while it was... Listen, it was a game that Liverpool completely dominated from start to finish. But whilst it's 1-0, when you're playing a side like Leicester, who, yes, have been struggling badly, but have the ability and have some players that can do some damage, particularly Maddison. So to get the second goal, that killed the game. It was the correct result, and it was a good performance. I thought Diaz, who made his debut, looks like he looked like a Liverpool player. So he was unfortunate not to score. He had 3 chances. Goalkeeper had to save 2 of them. So overall, great day for Liverpool.
Yeah, you're mentioning Luis Diaz. Don, it was a great start in the FA Cup for him, and this was his Premier League debut. Shone in it.
He was incredible, especially about 45 minutes. Okay, I thought he was easily Liverpool's best player. He started the game well. He had some neat touches. He was direct. He's got a little bit of Luis Suarez in him, where he's quite strong, and he's got a bit of devilment about him as well. Doesn't mind putting his foot in. Jota's one of these players where you analyse him and you struggle to analyse them, because when he's in the 18-yard box, he's always busy. He's always on the move. He always scores goals. He gets assists, and he plays in a sort of... He played wide right, even though he was quite inverted, and the movement was really good between himself and Firmino and Diaz at the start of the game. And then second half, it's incredible. I mean, hats off to Kasper Schmeichel, you know. He was fantastic. And without Schmeichel tonight, Liverpool could have won this by 5 or 6.
He did put in a decent show in Schmeichel, didn't he, Shaka?
He sure did, and continues to establish himself as one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. But I have to agree with both Don and Stevie. I thought Liverpool bossed the game, dominated, and while Schmeichel was in the form that he was in, there was always that little bit of concern with 1-0 and the kind of possession that Liverpool had. Eventually, Schmeichel's resolve was broken. That's no discredit to him in any way, and in the end, the least that Liverpool deserved.
Yeah, Liverpool dominant throughout this performance. Jan, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what we did see in this game. Mo Salah starting on the bench, understandably so, just come back from the Africa Cup of Nations. What did you make of him when he came on?
Well, he's always lively. I mean, I love to watch Salah play football. I mean, we're talking about Jota. He has also this ability to turn without using touches. I mean, Salah does the same. I was very proud to stop the ball and then turn. I mean, it looks like it's 200 years ago I did that. I mean, the players of today, it's amazing. And I must say, I'm impressed by Salah. I'm impressed by Liverpool, how they managed the last month or so, because there have been trouble with illness, COVID, like everybody else, a big game, stand up. A great tournament in Africa, of course, but for the players who missed out for the clubs, I still think that Liverpool and Klopp has made it all in a positive tune, and they've come strong out of this. And let's hope there is an excitement at the top. One game in hand, and Salah coming to his top form, Jota, Diaz. I agree, Diaz, love to watch him. And when Stephen Nicol, a Liverpool legend, tells a player that's been there for 2 minutes that he looks like a Liverpool player, that is the biggest compliment a newcomer can get to Liverpool.
I want to go back to Diogo Jota, though. I think that was his 100th goal in his club career. What a signing he has been. And I know we've said this before, but I feel that we need to keep reiterating it. What a signing he's been for Liverpool.
Yeah, and I think what makes him so great is, yes, the fact that he can finish. for a guy his size, absolutely unbelievable in the air. But for a defender, he's an absolute nightmare because you never know where he is. He never stays in one place. He's not a guy who you know is going to come at you through the middle or he's going to come at you from wide areas. You know, all of a sudden the ball will pop up on the box. And guess who's there first? Diogo Jota. He has that natural instinct of knowing where to be at the right time. And as I say, from a defender's point of view, absolute nightmare.
Did you have any idea he was this good, Don?
No, I didn't, Kay. That's what Jurgen Klopp does to players. He's got a good eye, Jurgen Klopp. He recognises talent. He makes them better. He's done the same with Sadio Mane. He's done the same with Mo Salah. And the list goes on and on and on. But his goal record, as Stevie said, he's brilliant in the air. He's a nightmare to try and mark. When you're trying to pin him down to a position, he doesn't sort of form to being a centre-forward or a number 10 or a wide player. He just plays the position. And, you know, he's one of these players where he'll miss two or three chances, but he's brave enough to keep going back into that 18-yard box and he's brave enough to put himself in the firing line. And nine times out of 10, he comes away always being heavily involved in games.
Shekhar, I want to go back to the title odds. Understandably so, Man City are heavy favourites. They have the advantage they do. They have a game in hand on Liverpool. With what you're seeing, though, do you think there is any chance for Liverpool and maybe some slips along the way for City?
Listen, there's always a fighter's chance, especially if you're talking about Liverpool and how good that team is. And everybody's been speaking about Liverpool. And of course, those two, Liverpool and City, still have to meet between now and the end of the season. You're hoping that there's some kind of a slip up for Manchester City. I still believe that the Champions League is their holy grail of trophies. So maybe as they go deeper in that competition, it takes a little bit more of their focus away from the league. But all that is just Liverpool hoping. We've seen City be this good. We've seen City win titles and finish off seasons as strongly as at any point in the season. So in all honesty, as a neutral, you're thinking it's less likely that Liverpool catch them than it's less likely that they catch them than they don't. But if you're in that Liverpool dressing room, you recognise the kind of football that you're playing. You recognise how deep your squad is, and it's gotten deeper since January with the additions that the boys have just spoken about. There is still that chance, and you never throw in that towel until the fat lady is through singing.
Don, do you think Pep Guardiola will be aware of Liverpool and the fact that they've got the record that they have, even though it is
Absolutely.
That hefty advantage at the top?
Absolutely. Pep won't be taking anything for granted. He won't be thinking, oh, the title's done. You know, he said that a couple of weeks ago. He was sort of flippantly jokingly said, oh, the title's done, give us a trophy then. Because he knows Liverpool won't go away. And you try and have a look at the fixtures that are coming up for both sides. Liverpool have got Burnley next, favourites to beat them. Then they've got Norwich. Man United slightly harder, I think, in their next four. They've got Norwich, expect them to beat them. Then they've got three tricky ones. I think they've got Man United, Everton and Spurs. And they dropped points against Southampton a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think Man City will be flawless from now to the end of the season. The problem for Liverpool is they have to be flawless. If Liverpool drop any points, if they draw a game and City, the winning machine, just go marching on, they take it to 10, take it to 12 points, then it's going to be nine impossible. While you've got a game in hand and you can bring it back to six, and you can try and get all the way to April and beat Man City at the Etihad, and you bring it all the way back to 3 points, it's still on.
You know, there's probably one person at Manchester City who's not got an eye on Liverpool, and that's Pep Guardiola. Because he knows that this has got nothing to do with Liverpool. He knows that his job is to make sure every time his City team step on the field, both individually and as a unit, He's on them. He's making sure they do what they're supposed to do. They concentrate on their jobs and they play the way they've been playing. I'm telling you, the last guy who's going to be looking at Liverpool is Pep Guardiola.
I want to get to the 74th minute in this game because it's something that's dividing opinion, shall we say. Mo Salah, as you'll see, he comes through and he just has the keeper to beat, Schmeichel. Now he gets his shot off and then he's taken down. Nothing happens for this situation, Stevie. Why?
This is to me, it's one of these. I think today, if the referee sees that, he would probably give it. But I'm going to say maybe 10 years ago, it changed because When I played and when the boys in the studio or listening to us played, that was the type of thing that happened and nobody expected to get a penalty. Salah had gotten his shot away. The defender's trying to block the shot, and in the meantime, he follows through and hits Salah. Nobody in Liverpool's side today was looking for a penalty, including Salah. The coaching staff weren't looking for a penalty.
But you say things have changed. The referee had a clear view of this. He was watching it. What's changed?
He's watching the save. But again, today...
Is that not a foul in the box, Jan?
Yeah, but I think it's a very interesting situation because I think Stevie got it right. But the referee don't see it. You have VAR, you have a lot of people sitting in somewhere to have a look at it. But it's quite interesting, the reaction on the pitch. Because I think that as football people, we think, well, he got the chance, didn't he? He had a chance to finish. Good save by Schmeichel. Keep on. That's what it is in the street. You have a shot, a goal, you missed it, and then you were kicked. On the other side, if that happened on the pitch, that you have a midfielder, an elegant midfielder, gets the ball, makes a pass, and then he is fouled a second later, he's probably cautioned. It's probably a yellow card and a free kick. So I'm leaning towards that my football heart says is no penalty, but I do understand that it doesn't make sense based on the rules that everybody sees. So then I can't understand that it's a penalty. But my football heart will always say, no, he got his chance and then he was fouled. And I think they did the same at Anfield, including the referee.
Don, where do you stand on it?
I stand on, he had his chance. I work with ex-referees, Premier League referees, like Dermot Gallagher and Chris Foy, and I always ask their opinion. Because it's not just a new thing, it's been happening for quite a while where strikers might get a shot off and they might get taken down, A, by a defender or a goalkeeper, and I ask their opinion. And their view is, it's a sort of unwritten rule where you've had your chance, there's an accidental collision, nothing to see. And I think it's one of them. No one in the stadium was asking for a penalty. Leicester actually played on, Jurgen Klopp, Mo Salah, I think you let that one go as a ref.
But it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting, Dan, that we are talking about the unwritten rule because we know that that is a foul on midfield. But I
you
like
can't
that.
Isolate every foul in the 8-yard box. I think it's a very lazy argument, Jan, when people say, it really grinds my gears when people say, yeah, but anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul.
Yeah, but I agree.
Well,
but that's why I tried. I tried to tell you that I think that football should flow. He had his chance. It was then fouled. Play on. I mean, that is quite interesting. But it's always these in the middle between what happened. But what I liked on the pitch today, as the boys know, we've all said it a couple of times, is that Salah didn't go for it. He didn't say, I need a penalty. What is wrong? And Klopp is not the quiet one if he sees there is a penalty situation out there. Mm.
Do you know, there are certain foibles in the game that you can't explain. And this is one of them. Another one, you know, and don't say I hate when somebody says, oh, anywhere else. Well, the fact is, it's true, because it would be a foul. It's a bit like, you know, when a defender's shepherding the ball out for a goal kick, if you tried to do that on the halfway line with your opponent, the referee would give a foul against you. But nobody thinks there's anything wrong with it. It's one of those little foibles that's in the game that I don't think anybody can explain. It's just something that we accept as football players that is right and is wrong.
But what if he's tackled and seriously injured him?
Stevie, I think if you take it the other way and you flip it and you go, well, every foul that happens in midfield, even the slight ones, are then you going to give penalties that it happens in the 18-yard box? Otherwise, we're seeing 6 penalties a game.
No, but you're taking it too far.
I'm not, because it's relevant to the argument.
Well, if it's a penalty in the box, it's a free kick outside the box, right?
Yeah.
So there's no real argument. So that doesn't count. We're talking about the ones that are unexplainable. That's what we're talking about. What you're talking about, Don, is whether you argue whether the contact's enough or is it a penalty or isn't it a penalty. What we're talking about is little situations like that one with Salah and like the one I said about shepherding the ball out. Those are little things that nobody can explain to you. Nobody.
But shepherding the ball out, a player's not going to get hurt. Salah could have been hurt in this instance here.
Yeah, but I think that, if I may say, I think that Stevie's point is very valid here. Because with VAR and everything, we make the football very the theory. That could have happened. And when things going quick and when we slow it down, it looks like everything is an attack on a player, doesn't it? But I like the way we now discuss, now football people are discussing and using a phrase that is no rules. This is just the way it is. And when we grew up, that was always the time. No, that is not a foul. Yeah, but the rule says, well, we don't care because this is just the way it is. And this situation, we don't see it very often, but this is just one of those situations. We thought Salah had his chance. He didn't score. Schmeichel saved. Then he was fouled. That's just the way it is.
So, Shaka, this is okay because it's just always been okay then.
It's always been an accepted part of the game. I'm in total agreement with the boys here and the phrases that they use. Stevie called it one of those foibles. and Jan refers to it as his football heart says it's not a foul. And I'm with them. And listen, as a player, you know that there are things that happen inside the box that would be given as a foul outside, or things that you just certainly do not even try when you're inside the box. It's a part of the game and part of your football and IQ, and you accept it as much. The one thing that jumped out at me, though, Kay, is you started by saying this is divided opinion, when all four of us seem to think it's not a penalty. So I'm wondering exactly whose opinion was divided.
Well, maybe go have a look on Twitter, guys. Maybe this is a thing of footballers against fans as well. Maybe that's what it's coming
Twitter's
to.
Not a real place, Kay.
No.
Twitter's not a real place.
Not the place to go
really?
For proper opinion.
let's move on to talk about the other game. Let's move on to talk about the other game that we saw, Wolves taking on Arsenal. Arsenal managed to see this one through despite the fact that they ended the game with just 10 men on the pitch after Martinelli was sent off. Gabriel's goal would stand as well. Wolves did process for a foul on the keeper here. I'd be interested to hear from Shaka in a moment, but I want to come to you first on what you thought about what we saw from Arsenal today.
I thought they dug in. I thought they showed a lot of heart. I mean, what I would say, Kay, is the sending off's an absolute joke. I mean, it's never a sending off in a million years for a number of reasons, because not every foul has to be a card. And the fact that Martinelli, you know, sort of pushed the guy, then turned his back on it, and the referee deems that as a yellow card offence. Well, Martinelli's got no idea that he was going to get yellow card for it, because if he did have an idea, then he wouldn't have made the second foul. So it was very picky from the ref, but they scored a legitimate goal. Jose Sarr thought he could get a hand on the ball. Lacazette just nicked in ahead of him. This is the one we're talking about. Martinelli picks up a yellow for that. He doesn't know it, because if he does know it, he wouldn't commit this foul. So it's ridiculously petty and harsh, I think. And then in the end, Arsenal dig in. They showed heart. They won 1-0 away from home. And they celebrated like a really, really big win when Spurs are dropping points, Man United are dropping points. And if Arsenal now can stitch a couple of back-to-back wins together, they can get back into the top four double quick.
So it's not fair to be sent off for a second yellow when you don't even know you're on the first yellow. But should he have known that he might be on a yellow after what he did there?
Let me tell you how unusual this is. I've been involved in professional football for 40-plus years. I have never, ever seen a player sent off in this particular situation like that. Ever. That's how unusual and rare this is, that I have never seen it. An old geezer like me has never witnessed this happening in a game.
Yeah, but
I think our producer remembers it happening between Ajax and Chelsea in the Champions League a couple of seasons ago, but it is a rarity. A big rarity.
Sorry, one. There's been a thousand years of football and you've thrown one at me.
Who's coming in there, Jan?
No, yeah, I'm just saying it's totally opposite of the discussion we had before. Because now we're sitting here again with our football hearts and we think, what is going on there? I mean, firstly, like Don says, it can't be a yellow card for every foul. That is point one. And then you don't get a feeling, okay, that maybe be a yellow card. But he doesn't know that here. And then the referee, for some funny reasons, makes two in one. I mean, no one who watch football will think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So this is a total opposite discussion that we have on Salah. Here we don't understand anything.
This is a situation. We're always talking about officials being officious. That is all this is.
Overzealous.
The decision he made here to send him off has got nothing to do with the game of football. It's got to do with sitting at a table, reading the rules of the game, and then just implicating what it says on the page.
What if it was 10 minutes apart, though? What if it was 10 minutes apart?
That's a completely different question. They're not 10 minutes apart. The fact is, as Don's point about the first one he doesn't know, the reason that if it's 10 minutes apart, you've no sympathy because he's already on a yellow.
Right. Checker? Mm.
To that point, again, this is another one of those foibles, another one of those where your football heart says something differently. I disagree with Don. I think both challenges were yellow card offences. And
what?
Had they happened in separate... let me just finish. Had they happened in separate moments of the game, I don't think anybody would complain. But with them happening in the same passage of play, so to speak, nobody involved in the game would have a problem with the referee just showing one yellow for that. This is kind of, as Jan put it, another aspect of that same conversation we were just having about the challenge on Salah.
Don, you were nodding there.
No, I was nodding because Shaka, in the end, I think, sort of sided with me. He said he wasn't going to side with me. Then he all of a sudden he said, I think it was just a yellow card, just one, not the two. So I'm confused, Shaka. Am I right or am I wrong?
I'm confused as well that you think Shaka agreed with you.
I think both incidents, I think both incidents by Martinelli were deserving of a yellow card.
Yes.
But in the foibles, to use Stevie's new word, foibles, to use Jan's footballing heart, with them happening in the same play, anybody involved in the game would have no problem with it being just one yellow card.
Yes.
But by the strictest interpretation of the law, the referee did what I guess he had to, but our footballing heart says something totally different.
Okay, how many people around the world now are Googling foibles? What does foibles mean? Because I am.
I just did, Doc.
Sorry, Jack.
It's quite interesting when you see, I think that a referee you need, when I watch a football game, I always try to watch the people in and around. How do the your teammates react? How do the opposition react? I mean, there will be no one here, if he gave one yellow, there will be no Wolves player running to the referee mm-hmm. saying, why don't you give him two yellows? This incident's before, as Stevie has been around since the Second World War, and he has never seen it before, and the Wolves player will never go over and say no, that is one yellow, two for few, you need one, two, and that will never happen. So I think that is again our football heart. Mm-hmm. So again, two interesting incidents today with different opinions on.
In the end, though, they saw it through. It was Arsenal's first win of 2022. It was actually their first goal since New Year's Day as well. But if you actually look at the odds to finish in the top four, this is what we're seeing here. 7-4 for Arsenal. And as mentioned, they're up to fifth in the league with this win. They've got two games in hand on fourth place West Ham, and they're just a point behind them. In fact, United and Arsenal are favourites to finish in the top four. Would you agree with that, Don?
I mean, tonight I would, Kay, but I mean, it's changing week by week. I mean, don't forget, Tottenham have got a game in hand on Arsenal, so if they won their game in hand, they would go level with Arsenal. It's changing all the time. That's why this race is going to be fascinating, because I don't think you can sit here now and say there's a clear favourite. I think all four teams that are going for it have got a real genuine chance of making the fourth spot. I think you'd be taking a massive gamble if you turned around and you said, this team is 100% going to get top four. It's all to play for.
Shaka, what do you think about your former club West Ham?
I still think they of the four are the least likely to finish top four, despite their current position. Despite yesterday's game, I am still leaning Spurs. Even though saying that, I thought the second half, Arsenal against Wolves, I thought Wolves by far had the better of the second half. And I cannot remember the last time I've been able to sit here and genuinely say that Arsenal defended exceedingly well with their backs to the wall when a big performance like that was needed. That has been our complaint about Arsenal for years now. Not just this season, not just Arteta, but for years. I thought you saw the best side of Arsenal in that respect in the second half against Spurs, but I'm still leaning... in the second half against Wolves, but I'm still leaning Spurs just.
All right, yeah, so Jan, as I mentioned, United and Arsenal, however, are favourites to finish in the top four. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, I think it's risky by Xhaka to go for Tottenham, because when I see Tottenham, I always think of typical. I have to always put typical. There's always typical at Tottenham game, and that is, and it's not typical of them to get into top four. I can't see that happening. But Manchester United, you sometimes you think they need to get top four with this team. Somehow they will find a way. But then you never know which team there are. And when we see their games, they are two different halves. And I want to say that it is on Twitter and social media and different places now that Arsenal has been a bit criticized that they celebrated this win so much at Wolves. I think that's realistically where Arsenal are now. There is no Arsene Wenger, there is no Thierry Henry, there is not the back four that never let in goals, or Tony Adams won every attack to be offside. This is Arsenal 2022. They have to be happy winning away against Wolves, and that is more realistic. And when I see that they're so realistic in their targets or where they are in their performance, I think they have an outsider chance.
I think it was Ruben Neves. I think Ruben Neves tweeted, Kay. I think Ruben Neves was a little bit gutted. I think he left a little bit on Arsenal, saying, "Oh, this is where Arsenal are at. They've beat Wolves and they've beat us." I mean, take everything into consideration. You know, Arsenal are away from home. They're down to 10 men. Martinelli should never have been sent off, and they've grafted to a 1-0 win at Wolves. Why wouldn't you celebrate it?
Especially with what we've seen from the beginning of the year from them so far. Things not really going their way. You weren't very kind, you guys, about Spurs yesterday. And obviously this is a situation where your mind can change on who's going to finish in the top four. Who are you going for?
I think I might have to flip again. I've been kind of in the Spurs camp, to be honest. But what a short weekend was just horrendous. And then when you look at Arsenal, I think Arsenal's got, one Premier League goal in the last five? But yet, they're still picking up points and moving up the table. That tells you that at the very least, they're not giving anything away. And as Xhaka said, we've been saying for years that this team has no guts, no strength, no leaders, no nothing. But yet, they turn round and put this sort of performance in. We have to give them credit where it's due. And it was certainly due today.
Gab and Jules talk a lot about Manchester United on their latest podcast. Make sure you download that wherever you do get your podcasts. That became available today. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Upcoming in La Liga this weekend, it all gets underway tomorrow with Sevilla against Elche. We've got Villarreal taking on Real Madrid. Atleti will be looking to bounce back after what we saw from them last weekend against Barcelona when they take on Getafe in what's an alternative Madrid derby. And there's a derby up in Catalonia as well, Espanyol against Barcelona. No love lost between these two sides. Make sure to catch that and all of these games on ESPN+. The cover of Sport today in Barcelona. Haaland, the main priority. Barcelona is said to be going all out for Erling Haaland this summer. Joan Laporta has determined to bring in the star striker. It's said that both Xavi and Laporta see his arrival as key for their new project. Really, Jan?
Did you talk to me now? Because it wasn't Norwegian. I didn't hear you there.
But I'm not saying really that they want him. Obviously they want him. But really, this is actually going to happen? Haaland going to Barcelona?
Well, I think it's more interesting to follow the Spanish press, because sometimes these headlines, water is wet, or you can use all metaphors. I mean, Barcelona want Haaland. Real Madrid want Haaland, Manchester City, Liverpool, Chelsea probably as well. They all want one of the most searched after players in history. And how the Spanish papers manage every fourth day to have one day Barcelona, they go all in, okay. And then Real Madrid go all in, okay. I suspect Barcelona is doing this, and Laporta has been doing quite a similar thing before, is to tell the banks that they still have money. Could he go to Barcelona? Probably. Could he go to Real Madrid? Probably. But they all want him. So I can't believe that their editors are still making those headlines, but it's fun for us.
Well, they also said that Barcelona are looking at bringing in a lot of other players on the cheap to leave room for his signing. And if they do get the chance to sign a player like this, this is who they'll be looking to bring in. Don, his agent, Mina Raiola, has apparently told Laporta that he'll decide at the end of March. Could you see him going to Barcelona?
I tell you, his agent, Mina Raiola, if he's a poker player, he is sitting there with four aces, because all the clubs are just going, we want him, we want him, we want him, and sit back, enjoy all the bids going in, and listen, he can take the pick out of any club that he wants to go to. I didn't think it was a particularly sound move, if that's what Laporte said, when he said that we're going to buy players on the cheap to try and afford Haaland. That doesn't exactly excite you as a player when you go, what, you're just going to buy rubbish players just to accommodate me? No thanks, I'll go to Man City and I'll win some titles, or I'll go to Real Madrid and I'll play with some Galactico players there and I'll go and win titles and win trophies for fun. I'm with Jan. I mean, the Barca story, it's just madness every day, because one minute they've got no money, they can't register players, but yet they're going to go and spend fortunes on Haaland. How?
But they are they say in this report that they'll make it happen, basically, that whatever it takes, they'll make it happen. We've seen some players still coming in, Don. Are they becoming a more attractive prospect again for players like this, Jan?
Yeah, probably. That's what they try to do. And I mean, Mbappé or Haaland, there will be the big signings coming up to the summer. Will of course attract more players. But this is just like 2 seconds ago that they did have none money, nothing. So this is a part of it. But what is interesting now, we're coming into a very interesting time now, because the time frame of Haaland's next step, we now go into the stage where he will have the chat with Dortmund. How long will that take? 2 or 3 weeks? Or will it be in the period? Then there will come another period where he have to decide, based on those conversations, will he stay or will he go, on to which club will he go? So we are getting into some interesting 5-6 weeks now, because Dortmund will ask for time to find a replacement if he's going to go. So we have talked all about this time that this clause will... I thought, in my naivety, that is after the season, so they can concentrate on that. But it's probably a time coming up now so that Dortmund will have a time to find eventually a replacement if he decides to go. So I think that we should be aware now the next 5-6 weeks.
Oh, well, Dortmund do actually have something to celebrate at the moment, Jan, with Niklas Süle going to them at the end of the season. And the reason I'm glad to bring this up and see Stevie's reaction is because, as you can tell by his reaction, Stevie is not a fan. So, Jan, Stevie thinks this makes complete sense. He's just not good enough for Bayern.
Well, there are two conversations here. There's one conversation: is the player good enough or not good enough? That is a matter of taste. I will just give you some facts. Julian Nagelsmann, the Bayern coach, he was desperate to keep Süle. Point one. Point two: for the first time, and I can't remember if it ever happened before, is that Dortmund got a player that Bayern wanted to keep. Point three. Fact three, if you read the papers now or the media in Germany, there is a spin-off going on. He was too fat, he was too injury, he didn't come back fit. This is the Bayern machine using the journalist to put some dirty bags on Süle. This is nothing to do with his thing. Nagelsmann wanted him, Hansi Flick says he is a German national player, and then, please, Mr. Nickel, just say he's not good enough. But this is the facts.
He's not good enough.
Fair enough.
He's not.
That is.
I'll tell you what, Jan. I'll tell you. There's two things, right? Number one, can he pass the ball? Yes. Number two, can he defend? Absolutely not. This guy is a liability. And the only reason why he does fine with Bayern is because Bayern really don't do that much defending and they can get away with it. I am willing right now, I can't wait to see how good this Dortmund back line is with him in it. I bet you it's any better than it is right now because Jan, he's not a good defender.
First of all, it can't be worse. That is point one again. secondly, I mean, Steve, you got your opinion. I understand where you come from because there are world games. He doesn't look fit. And sometimes there is always... Thank God you didn't say the following sentence. You said he's not quick enough because he's a lot quicker than people think. That is point two. But I think that is quite interesting. That's why I used it as a fact, because this was actually a player Bayern wanted to keep. They say otherwise, but they wanted to keep him. And that is maybe good. That is very good for German football. And I think that Niklas Süle will do well for Dortmund. So I don't 100% agree. I'm more on the side of Hansi Flick and Julian Nagelsmann.
Hold on. Just this last point about this guy is quicker than people think. I'm not talking about going on a 100-yard sprint. Because if Süle can do it 100 yards in 12 seconds, then I'll tell you what, he's quick. But when you're playing as a defender and as a centre-back, you're talking about 5 yards. You're talking about a step. Whether you've got it and you beat the defender, and if you don't have it, people are past you. They're gone. And you can't recover. That's what. When I say defending, I'm not talking about being able to run 40 or 50 yards and beat somebody over a race. I'm talking about in and around his feet. He can't lift his feet. I've seen it so many times. I won't have that at all, honestly.
But this is we talked about quickness. I mean, Bayern, they make the pressure quite high, so a defender has to stay high, and he's still playing all the time with Nagelsmann, who likes his defenders to stand high. So I'm not talking about this guy competing with Usain Bolt or a 100-yard or 100-meter runner. It's not. I think that he is quicker than we give him credit for, Stevie. I respect what you're saying because he is a player that people either are for or against. I just noticed that Hansi Flick, Marco Rose and Julian Nagelsmann rate him. But, as you're saying, this is a 50-50 player. Some say he can't defend, but the three most important persons in his life think that he is a good defender.
I think the last thing I will say on it is,
all right,
it depends what your options are, if you're Hansi Flick or Nagelsmann.
All right, so it's 50-50 here in the studio between Stevie and Jan. So, Don Hutchison, you've got the deciding vote on Niklas Süle. Are you for or against him?
I was for Niklas Süle probably 2.5 years ago before he'd done his ACL. And I think he's bulked up. And I'm not meaning he's bulked up in terms of being heavy or fat. I think it's one of them where he's been in the gym, he's worked on his upper body, and he looks a little bit heavy to me. Now, I think him going to Dortmund will just add another body. I'm 50-50 with him. I think he had his best days before his ACL. I don't necessarily think he's going to go into Dortmund and make them stronger and get them anywhere near Bayern and take them to a title. I don't think that's going to happen. So for Dortmund, I think you buy him. As I said, you add a body to your ranks and you add competition for places. But there's better players out there and there's better defenders than Niklas Süle out there.
What with that, for a ringing endorsement, he's a body.
It's a free transfer at the end of the season. He's 26 years old and they need some...
Got over the line with my head.
Right. Well, you know what? Time will tell. And guess where you can find out? Right here on ESPN Plus, because you can see every single Bundesliga game every weekend. And you can see how this will play out as well. The race right now. Bayern running away with it so far. In fact, they are well on their way to securing their 10th consecutive Bundesliga title. And the last nine barely even being close. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, the new Bundesliga boss is open to the idea of playoffs to decide a winner. She says, of course, the Bundesliga would be more attractive if there were more competition at the top. And for me, there are no sacred cows. If playoffs can help us, then let's talk about playoffs. Oliver Kahn had this to say about the situation in the Champions League from 2024. There will be a new format that we're confident about. A playoff format with semi-finals and a final would mean excitement for Bundesliga fans. Therefore, it makes sense to kick around a thought like that. We at Bayern are always open to new ideas. Rudi Völler had this to say. Bayer Leverkusen's sporting director right now and says playoffs are completely the wrong approach. I'm absolutely against it. Well, 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 I'm sure there are a few sides in favour of it. Interesting to see Oliver Kahn saying that on Bayern's behalf. What do you make of it all, Shaka?
I'm not at all in favour of playoffs, Sydney, at this level. I love playoffs at the bottom of the table. We're talking relegation and teams in the bottom three positions against teams in the top three positions in the league below. But as far as the winning the top league goes, I am not at all in favour. If something isn't broke, don't try to fix it. I'm not sure why people are trying to force this issue in the way that they are.
But it's broken.
I mean, we're saying, is it broken? Because we mentioned they are well on their way, Bayern, right now to their 10th consecutive Bundesliga title. And when I say it's not even close, just look at the points gap here. Only in the 2018-19 season do you see that the points gap was very close, was 2 points. Other than that, all those other years are double-digit figures. So you can see why something like this has been brought up, and you can see why some people may be in favour of it, Jan.
Yes, and it's quite interesting, but because I'm with Xhaka, I don't like playoffs taking the championship. But what is interesting in Germany, the big football nation of Germany now looks like Scotland or Romania with Steaua Bucuresti or some other countries. And no disrespect to Scotland, but it shouldn't be like this with all the great teams in Germany. So it's broken. Let's start there. And this is the new woman who is in charge over the Bundesliga. She started, it was a very good interview. She had new ideas, she was throwing them out. But what is interesting in Germany, so here is Bayern winning the league every year. And Oliver Kahn said, yeah, let's talk about that. We'll see, we'll find some new ideas. And then is Rudi Völler representing Leverkusen. The last time they won a championship, that was never. So the only chance they have to get closer to Bayern is through a playoff, but he is 100% against it. You can say that is good, or you can say that is bad. What I think is more interesting in Germany is that they have to talk about this 50+1 rule, that they say the fans are in charge, because they are coming behind international teams all the time in terms of money. They're very proud of that rule. But still, I'm with Oliver Kahn. You have to talk, because you have to do something, but I don't like the playoff idea. It should be the league champion should be the best over the 34 games.
Don?
Can
my
I just say,
it's the most
broken,
ridiculous thing. Ridiculous thing.
Hang on. Sorry, Don, I came to you, but I'm just going to let Shaka reply to that, because it sounds like you wanted to reply to that, Shaka.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Don. I was just saying, we can't just sit here and say it's broken because Bayern are better than everybody else. I think there are other ways to address that imbalance in German football without having to resort to go into playoffs. Talk about the distribution of TV revenues. Talk about capping commercial revenues. There are a number of ways that you can address that and make the competition more equal. If that's what you're trying to do, other than that, or unless all you're really trying to do is not address the imbalance, not make other teams better, just give them the opportunity to win the league by being better than Bayern on one or two days.
Yeah, but what I meant with broken is that I like that the new girl in town, the new sheriff in town, discussed the ideas. Yeah, Donata Hoffmann, and she's coming into after a very successful Christian Seifert, and she said, because it's not only about the league championship, this is a problem with the brand Bundesliga. And I agree, there are 100 different or 50 different things that could be done, but this is a problem because it's not interesting for foreign countries to watch the Bundesliga if you always end up with Bayern. You may say that Manchester City won it over the years, but there is a competition to win it. And it's nothing to do with Bayern. Bayern can't be slowing down. It must be the other teams make it quicker, make more speed, go more into this kind of thing. But a playoff, nope, don't like it. That is ice hockey for me.
Don?
Oh, my day. It's the most ridiculous idea
I've ever heard in my life. Oh, let's try and give Bayern some competition. Oh, let's try and have a playoff just so someone else can try and bid Bayern to a title. Here's an idea. If you're Leipzig or you're Borussia Dortmund, stop selling your players to Bayern Munich. Stop selling them. You're only making Bayern Munich stronger every single season. Don't sell them your best players. When was the last time you've seen Liverpool sell some of their players to Man United or Man United players to Liverpool? Raheem Sterling's only the player I can think of off the top of my head that's left Liverpool to strengthen Man City. Apart from that, it doesn't happen. It's the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard.
And not only that, I mean, the only thing that can stop Bayern, we've seen that over the years, is if they appoint the wrong coach. That can kill them off. That can slow them down.
Stop selling
exactly,
players,
but listen, now, but yeah, but even worse, RB Leipzig was second in the league, and then let them have Julian Nagelsmann.
Exactly.
I mean, it's terrible.
And
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Ridiculous.
Exactly.
This is actually a good topic for this show. Because we've been talking about football heart, whatever you want to call it. And this is so wrong from a football standpoint of view. I can't obviously speak for the rest of the boys, but the players I know, they want the best side over the season to be the champions. They don't want a team who are clearly not as good as another team lifting a trophy at the end of the year. That's not football. That's not the football heart. It's not football the way we know it. I mean, they have an MLS. And last year, New England Revolution were miles ahead of everybody else, but will get no recognition at all because they got beaten in the playoffs. Took a couple of years earlier. It was LA.
Is this what
LA.
It was all boiling down to? That the Revs got robbed? Is that what you're trying to say?
It's wrong. It goes against the whole thing. And when we start playing, we want to play for the best team and we want to win. And everybody knows that the most prestigious thing is winning the league. That's the most prestigious thing. And if you take that away, you're ripping the heart out of a lot of fans and players.
Well, right now, there is no playoff system in the Bundesliga, and you can continue to watch it here on ESPN Plus every weekend, including this weekend. It all gets underway tomorrow, the latest round with Leipzig taking on Cologne. Bayern are actually in action on Saturday against Greuther Fürth, and on Sunday, you'll be able to see Borussia Dortmund taking on Union Berlin. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. In Coppa Italia action, 10-man Fiorentina beat Atalanta with the last kick of the match to head to the Coppa Italia semi-final. And you've got Juventus now taking on Fiorentina. Juventus coming through in their game against Sassuolo. And on the other side, it is the Derby della Madonnina. Again, another Milan derby. Very soon after the one we just saw over the weekend, Milan taking on Inter. I wonder how that will affect Xhaka's power rankings. Oh, some new entries, some dropping out. Xhaka, what have we got?
We've got Celtic coming in, making a debut after their, I think they've only dropped 2 points in the league since October, November, something ridiculous like that. Inter are the big sufferers this week after they lose to AC Milan, but they're still top in Serie A and have a game in hand on both Napoli and AC Milan, so they managed to hang on. Bilbao would have been in, but for that draw earlier in the Copa del Rey. And then the rest speaks for itself. Real Madrid, Chelsea, PSG, Ajax. Bayern have actually dropped down. It's just so tight at the top between City, Liverpool and Bayern Munich. I just felt that they made harder work of Leipzig over the weekend than they should have and drop a spot. But that's just how tight it is at the top. Everything else is just, I mean, Porto and Ajax cannot stop winning domestically. The rest speak for themselves. Chelsea are in after they get to the Club World Cup final.
Jan's been clapping and smiling when he saw the power rankings this week. Why is that, Jan?
Because there are two things that I miss and I long to see. That is the sun in Norway and the power ranking of Shaka Hislop. I love his power ranking. But there is always some... I mean, he took Celtic in. That is probably because there are some Scottish friends of his. Where is Milan and things like that? Where is Milan? And he will do that for his friends. But I love his power ranking. I love his passion for this. And I asked him before the show today, as you heard, where do you need the education to do this power ranking? Because Shaka's power ranking is fantastic. I love it. I used to be neutral to it, but now I love it more than anything else.
It's the only reason Stevie and I turn up on a Thursday, to be honest.
Honestly, I have heard every excuse or story concerning Shaka's power rankings. But today he brought out a new one.
What?
Bayern dropped down, even though they won, but because they struggled to beat Leipzig. That is a new one, Shaka. Congratulations.
They struggled to beat the inferior side. How dare they come through?
It's just Liverpool and Bayern swap places. It's tied to the top. That's all. Let me just say, right? Despite Stevie's efforts, after getting compared to the sun in Norway, I'm really happy this week.
Well, listen, not everyone's had their say yet, Shaka, because you know Don usually has something to complain about with Don the power rankings. We're going to let him speak.
Bayern Munich, third, right, in Shaka's power rankings. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to buy Liverpool's players and Man City's players to try and get top of the power rankings.
It'll be a playoff system in a minute.
It'll be a playoff between Inter in 10th and Celtic in 9th.
No, but it's for Shaka. Shaka is math. It's something's not. It's like the percentage of Don. I mean, they're struggling beating RB Leipzig. It's quite interesting.
That's not a compliment. That's not a compliment, Shaka.
No, and Liverpool beat mighty Leicester today, and then they swap places because Bayern struggling against Leipzig, who is the number two in Germany in a normal year. But I always support Shaka because this power ranking that is up there for me. With a candidate for the Nobel Prize.
Well, there you go, Shaka. Oh, we're going to let you off with it this week. This is the same crew that will be back for extra time.
By the minute.
And did someone mention percentages? Good job, because one of those questions is coming up in today's show.
Yeah, I wonder who that's for.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Before we do go, I must tell you about Douglas Costa. It's official. LA Galaxy have signed him. He had been on loan from Juventus at Gremio, but Gremio have been relegated. So they are now looking to deal with their finances. And this has caused Douglas Costa to be coming this way. There is much to discuss about this situation. Football Americas will do exactly that tonight. Sebi Salazar and Hercules Gomez will be talking about Douglas Costa's transfer.
Football February on ESPN Plus continues. The talent of Bundesliga is on display, and the passion of La Liga intensifies with a big rivalry match, the Derby of Barcelona, this weekend on ESPN Plus.
Times and dates for the FA Cup games that are coming up in the fifth round, March 1st through March 7th at 2:15 p.m. You can see some of these. Not such early rises for us. We've got Spurs taking on Middlesbrough, the Riverside. Liverpool against Norwich. That's one of the Premier League affairs that we're seeing. Forest against Huddersfield. There is much to look out for as the FA Cup continues here on ESPN+. Next week, the Champions League back as well. And just a reminder of how the round of 16 first leg is looking. On Tuesday, it will be PSG taking on Real Madrid, Sporting against Man City. And on Wednesday, Salzburg against Bayern and Inter taking on Liverpool. Here's a look at the Ligue 1 standings. PSG playing early tomorrow with that game in mind. They are still top of the table and it doesn't look as though they'll be giving that up anytime soon. They will take on Rennes Friday, 3 Eastern. And in Portugal, with an eye on Sporting as well. Porto against Sporting. Nice game there. Friday, 3:15 Eastern. The two at the top of the table. 6 points between them. And don't forget Sporting taking on City. There'll be a lot of talk about this on tomorrow's show. ESPN FC, as always, available daily, 7 days a week, with all these delightful men and takes and debate every single week. And of course, Shaka's power rankings too, which we live for on a Thursday. The whole crew will be back answering your questions on Extra Time, so stay right where you are. We'll be back tomorrow with the show as well. Thanks for being with us tonight. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Don's dancing, Jan kind of half dancing. No, he's not. He's just bracing himself, it seems.
Waiting for the sun to come up.
He's waiting for the sun to come. No, the sun's already out because Shaka Hislop's here.
Yeah.
Shaka, yeah.
Good line.
There, good. And Stevie Nicol is here with me in the studio. All right, let's get to it then, shall we? The first question is for you, Stevie. For Stevie, this might be a silly question, but as a coach, how do you discourage players from getting red cards? Could you pass your answer down to Arteta while you're at it?
Oof. I mean, there's... My goodness. It's really not a straightforward answer because it depends on the player. If you've got a player who can... The switch can flip at any time. I mean, you obviously have to keep on at them, but sometimes you can't do anything to stop it. Again, with other players who are disciplined and who are calmer, you know, just sensible things like count to three or take a deep breath, or you know, you just talk to them in order to try and get them to calm down. But some guys, just the switch goes. I mean, imagine Roy Keane. Imagine trying to tell Roy Keane not to go and half somebody in two. It's hard. Not an easy answer.
It just reminded me of something we were talking about with you, Shaka, just the other week, how there's just some of those players that, like Stevie's saying, there's nothing you can do, really. They're probably just going to get those red cards anyway.
You know what? I've got a good one for you. A guy called Joey Frantino played for me. Now, Joey is the most black and white guy you've ever met. It's either right or it's wrong. There's no grey area, there's no middle. And he came to me one day at half-time. We're playing Chicago Fire. I can't remember the centre forward's name, but he was a big guy, he was awkward. And he had put Joey out for a couple of months with an ankle injury. And at half time, Joey came up to him, he went, what is it? He went, can I go for him? And I went, what? He said, I just want to do him. I want to go. And I went, Joey, I said, look, I'd love to say yes, on you go, because I'm sure you would love to get him back. Problem is, if you do that, then you're doing the rest of us. There's 10 other guys on the field and the rest of the team just because you want to go and kick the guy. And he just looked me straight in the eye and went, you're right, OK, I won't. And off he went.
So there you go. So there's your advice. You managed to do it.
Yeah, there you go.
Aye. So Stevie did have
just
a golden
Joey,
word
do that
prevented it happening.
You'll be all right.
Yeah. Do them late on.
to them late on. Shaka, but you were just saying the other week, weren't you, that there was a player in your team that there's just no stopping some players.
Johnny Moncur at West Ham.
Yes.
He was going to get booked. It does not matter. It became a joke with the West Ham fans. And from the time he came on, because Johnny normally came off the bench, this was later on in his career, the whole crowd would just be on edge. And every time the ball came anywhere near John, the whole crowd would be going, whoa, because they knew. Everybody knew.
I must tell my favorite John Moncur story, because I played with him in Swindon. And I've told it before, but he did a trick that I've ever seen before. We went with a bus through London. He went up on the roof on that sun thing at the back of the bus. He crawled over the bus, and then he knocked on forward by the manager. And the manager, John Gorman, who's the nicest man in football, he couldn't understand what was this knock coming from. And then they heard John said on the rooftop in London, and he said, "Can you please let me in?" And he went down. I mean, that is John Moncur.
Every time his name comes up, there's always a story, and I feel like everyone talks the next one.
He's the best.
Best man.
We've got to move on, because we know we've got more in the bag for whenever his name comes up again. Don, what percentage of chance is there of Poch being United manager next season?
Ooh. Well, it changes every week, doesn't it? I mean, I was reading this morning about Luis Enrique. Erik ten Hag's in the equation as well. Rangnick's desperate for the job, and Poch wants it as well. I mean, according to the Man United players, they would like Pochettino. I would say a strong 50%.
And the others?
Yeah, I feel you should weigh in on this.
A strong 50%?
What's strong?
What's weak? What's weak?
49.
So
Jan's pointing, Don. It must be serious.
Now, Don, if Rangnick is then on a 60% chance, are we then on 110?
He's not. Rangnick's got no chance of getting it.
Jan, lovely. Do you have a preference on who would the next United manager be?
Interesting. I think it all depends how strong Rangnick will be in the process of appointing one. I think there is a chance that he hasn't showed so far that he will be the one. I think he has a chance if you put him into top four. And then we'll see. I mean, he is a networker big time. I'm not sure who he's closest to. Ten Hag or Pochettino, Enrique. They don't come forward as particular typical Rangnick friends. But Don, you said it. What is this thing about Manchester United player want this and want that?
I mean, that is silly.
Should concentrate playing football. They want the new manager. I can't say the two words that I want to say now, but don't do it, Manchester United players. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, it looks like you and Don are definitely in agreement on that one. For the guys, Stevie, I'll start with you. Is it more intimidating playing in a huge stadium full to capacity or a smaller one where you can actually hear what the supporters are all saying?
Good question.
Good question.
It's definitely harder in a stadium where there's nobody there. That basically brings it down to you. How good a professional are you that you can concentrate with no help, basically? You know, it should be the easiest thing on the planet for a good professional to step into a stadium with 100,000 people in it and absolutely love it and put your chest out and breathe it in. That should be easy. It's the two men and a dog. That's tough. That's a lot harder.
Who said good question?
No, it's a good question.
I said it, Don. Please, Don, go.
Sorry, Anna. It is a good question because, well, Stevie's right. It's one of them where we're in the game, Kay, to play in the best stadiums. And I'll go back to the England, the England-Scotland game at Wembley, where you're standing there and the English fans are booing the Scottish national anthem. And you're standing there and you go, come on, like the adrenaline's flowing. This is what I'm built for. And then all of a sudden you go and play at Macclesfield, another John Moncur story, and he actually got sent off in the game, and then I got stitches in my thigh, I got ripped by someone's stud, and I cut my thigh, and I had to go off, and John Moncur went, "What are you doing?" And I went, I've just been sent off. I was lying. And John went, have you? And I went, yeah, yeah, yeah. So John was buzzing, thinking like the two of us have been sent off. Macclesfield beat West Ham. There was no one there. Glenn Rhoda then came in, went ballistic at John Moncur. You've let the side down. You've let all the fans down. You've let your teammates down. You're an absolute disgrace today. And he went to town on him and he went, John Moncur went, what about Hutch? He went, any chance of giving him some stick? He got sent off as well. And I never... And Glenn Rhoda's like, what are you talking about, John? He had to go off because he was stitched in his eye.
It's like you knew he was going to grass you up, Dan.
Yeah, he was buzzing. Yeah, don't Shaka. Did you play in that, Shaka? I'm not sure if you played in that. We lost to Macclesfield. I think it was Glenn's last game.
I don't remember that one.
Glenn's last game.
Yeah, I left before. I left long before Glenn.
Oh, it was an FA Cup tie,
but,
and we got beat.
Checker,
this is my daily life in Norway. I played two years in the top league of Norway. We didn't have a big crowd, and we had a big derby between Lillestrøm and Strømmen. And there was this fan who had a go at our centre half, Bård Bjerkland, the toughest guy in town. And after the game, the game was over, and suddenly jumped over the fence and ran after the fan. And this was a rivalry, a top league game in Norway. So I've seen it all.
I bet. Shaka, what about you? The huge stadium full or the small stadiums where you can hear everything?
To the exact wording of the question, I think it's more intimidating to play in front of large crowds. But as a footballer, that's what you look forward to. You know, that's what your boyhood dreams were made of, playing in front of big crowds and full stadiums. And I think as a result, it just kind of it gets the adrenaline flowing far more than small stadiums.
Stevie, who's the best front three for Liverpool if all attackers are fit?
Oh,
wow.
That's a good one.
It's a tough one to answer because there are two things that I guess, if you're Klopp and you're asking yourself that question, I think the only problem you have is who plays through the middle, because you're playing Mane and you're playing Salah. So the question is, is it better for Mane and Salah to have Firmino there to play with? Or is it better for the team to have a guy who, if it's right now, who's scoring goals? That's the question you have to ask yourself if you're Klopp. And there's not a wrong answer.
If you're Klopp right now, who are you going for?
Wow. It's tough. It's about goals, isn't it?
Firmino!
Oh, see, it's not...
Diaz!
It's
not.
Steve Highway!
Stevie doesn't want to answer it.
Do you know what? I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with Firmino because you've got two guys. Mane hasn't quite been as good so far this season at putting the ball in the net, but he's too good not to do it.
Right.
And you've got Salah because you know what you're getting. So I'm going to change and I'm going to go Firmino, yeah. Because I think that three is a proven three. Champions League winners as a three. So I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Anybody disagree?
Yeah, Don? But there's no wrong answer. And
don't sit on the fence, Don. We want an answer.
I'm not going to sit on the fence. I'll be hated for it. But I'm going to go Diaz on the left, Jota through the middle, and Salah on the right.
What, instead of Mane?
No, but that is Don.
Oh, come on. Don't be
Don
daft.
Don is a tough guy, okay? He is a romantic guy, you know? Because today, he looked at Diaz, he got in love, and when you get in love, you tell them to play. That's how it is.
I know. A couple of games in, and he's already sold.
He just doesn't learn. He just doesn't learn that, Hutchinson boy.
Don, I love you. Yeah, I love you too. I love you too.
Oh,
I love
man.
You.
Then his head turned, doesn't he, Don?
You're standing on the edge of the pool. Just push me in.
All right.
There you go.
Don, what's the greatest game you ever had as a youth player?
Oh,
do you know what? That's an easy one for me to answer, Kay, because I was playing really well from the age of sort of 12 to about 15, 16, and that's when you normally start attracting, like, the professional clubs. And Newcastle were keeping an eye on me, my boyhood team, and I stood on the Gallagher end all the way through my sort of teens. I was desperate to play for Newcastle. And I had a period in that sort of 12 to 15, 16 where I was playing really well. And Newcastle were watching me. And they decided and they asked Redruff Boys Club, my boys club. There's two teams, there's two boys clubs in Gateshead and Newcastle. One's Wall's End, where Alan Shearer, Michael Carrick, Steve Stone, a lot of the Newcastle players came out of. And then there's Redruff Boys Clubs, where I came out of and Paul Gascoigne came out of. And Newcastle requested a game. Newcastle under-17s against Redruff Boys Club. And I had a game where we've all had them, where I was absolutely on fire. Everything I was doing was coming off, nutmegging people, scoring people. My first touch was on. Everything about my game was on. And then 15 minutes to go.
My dinner's in the oven. Come on.
15 minutes to go, a Newcastle player broke my knee. He two-footed me and broke my leg. Finished me.
No, I don't want that. No, I don't want
finished
that story.
Finished me.
I don't like bad story ends.
Finished me for a year and a half.
No, terrible.
Stevie,
sad story.
Would you,
I can't even remember, honestly.
Would you like to say sorry to John?
No. I start crying. Yeah.
Say sorry, Stevie. Yeah. I'll start crying.
Yeah. But Don, you know what? Maybe it just made that drive even stronger because look what came of it in the end.
There you go. I went to Hartlepool a year later.
And now you're here on ESPN FC.
Exactly.
Yay. Shaka, what is your favourite Don moment? Is it Harry Kane to City, done deal? United have Galacticos. Thiago Alcantara will dominate the Madrid midfield. These are just some classics.
You know, it would have to be Harry Kane to Man City because he was so adamant. I mean, even when we weren't on air and we were just chatting off air, he was like, I'm telling you, it's done.
It's still on.
I'm sure it is. But he was so certain. It was so funny.
Don? You know what? That's a decent question, that, isn't it? Stevie, have you got a favourite Don moment?
It's got to be Galacticos, isn't it? Although, no, wait a minute. What was it a couple of years ago with West Ham? He said West Ham was only fourth.
West Ham.
Yeah.
Yeah, finished on fourth.
Just avoided relegation.
Yeah, they did.
That was
they
a belter.
They went down.
That was a belter. Galacticos was good, though.
Don, do you still stand by any of these?
I can't stand by any of them, apart from maybe Harry Kane and Pochettino to Man United in the summer.
Don't start changing it now, Don. That doesn't count.
I'm not. I'm adding another one in. I'm adding another one in just for the crack.
All right. Well, it is the show for that. Anyway, thanks so much for all your questions. There were some good ones today. I think even Craig Burley would have approved, but he's not on the show today.
No, he wouldn't. There'd have been
something. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget, we are available every single day, so be sure to always tune in to ESPN FC.